Hello, this is Larry Russ, former keyboardist and vocalist for the classic rock band Iron Butterfly, and I'm hanging out rocking with Seattle Wave Radio.
Welcome to Northwest Prime, bringing Seattle to the world and the world to Seattle. I'm your host, Lori Ness, a soldier on the front line of the mainstream. You can listen to this and other shows at northwestprime.com, and be sure to stay with Seattle Wave Radio 24/7, 365 for more great music and interviews. We're starting a movement of kindness, and we want you to join us. Let's get this show started.
Day for me. There is an artist that I've been just personally behind and a fan for quite some time now, and it's been my goal to tracking down because he's very busy and getting to stop by for a few minutes, and that's Blake Noble, and Blake is here with us today. Blake is a musician's musician, and I've talked about this on the show before. When you are unsure, because there's so much music out there, what to follow, what to buy, what to play, find what the other musicians are listening to and follow what they do, and they're listening to Blake Noble, and that's just there's just no doubt about that. In my opinion, Blake defines the term musician artist. He is, fantastic. We're going to talk a little bit about that. He's originally from Byron Bay on the east coast of Australia. He plays several instruments, but he focuses on the 12-string guitar, which he plays in a percussive way. He also plays the didgeridoo, so we've all heard about that, and he can play that simultaneously with the guitar. He's one of very few musicians in the world who plays the percussive tap lap guitar on the 12-string with the didgeridoo simultaneously. It is absolutely amazing. Please, 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 if you do nothing else I've ever asked you to do, go to BlakeNobleMusic.com and support this music. This needs to be in everybody's home. It needs to be on everybody's iPad, on everybody's iPod, on everybody's music player. So, and I'm going to play some of that for you today. But first, without further ado, let's bring Blake on and talk to him. So thanks, Blake, for coming on.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me.
So was it in 2012 that you actually came to Seattle from Australia?
Yeah, it was. I made the big move over after a long series of battles with visas and things like that, and finally got to come over, which was a big dream for me to be able to come and live and play music in the US. That's a huge jump forward for my career. Yeah, I'm very lucky to be here.
Well, I've talked to a lot of musicians from the UK. They always talk about what a massive place the United States is to kind of cover musically on tour. But Australia is also a massive place as well, and I would think covering music in Australia would be quite a feat as well, getting around the country.
Yeah, the touring is quite different. It's a long distance between shows over there, and you know, Australia is about the same size as the US, but there's only about 22 million people in Australia, and there's over 350 million people here. So it's a much larger scale over here, but they do have their similarities as well.
What's the difference between the music scene in Seattle now versus what it was like in Australia?
Well, one of the main things for me coming over here was I immediately had access to some well-known musicians that live in Seattle and around Seattle. So, and, you know, being in Australia, I don't have as much access to that. So being able to tap into some of the people that have been in the music industry around the world, but, you know, mainly in the USA, it's just an incredible opportunity. I've been lucky to work with people like Lee Oscar and Roger Fisher from Heart, among lots of other touring bands that are, you know, that are doing really well, and so them and have those opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and that's one great thing about Seattle is we do have really great people like Alan White and Roger Fisher and Lee Oscar, these really legends in the music business, and they're very active in helping up-and-coming musicians. They're very active in the community as well.
That's true, yeah. Yeah, they're very supportive and opening, and you don't always expect people that have had careers like that to be so accepting of newcomers, but they, you know, the whole music scene has really welcomed me with open arms, and that's really rare, and it's really nice to kind of have that be part of my experience here. Not that it's been easy by any means, it's just that the other musicians in the area are very accepting.
Yeah, I found that to be very true. You have a new collaboration with, I guess we had on not long ago, Cody Beebe, Rust on the Rails. And you debuted that the other night at the Crocodile. And I've been reading on Facebook pages, Seattle Wave Radio Facebook page posted about how much that they really liked it. And it seemed to really catch the imagination and the energy of the crowd.
Yeah, it was a great couple of shows. We played the Croc on Friday night, and then we took the whole four-band bill to Yakima and played at the Seasons Performance Hall there. You know, and that's kind of in the area for the Chinook Festival, which is in September. And we were it was the lineup release party for that. So it was an incredible lineup, and I was lucky enough to form this side project with Cody Beebe from Cody Beebe and the Crooks, and his bass player Eric, and Tim Snyder, who's an incredible violinist out of Portland, and also Scott Mercado on drums. He's from a little band called Candlebox. So it's a really cool mix of different styles, and that's what we wanted to do. There's so many bands out there, and a lot of bands have, you know, kind of a Seattle sound, I guess you could call it. And so we wanted to start a band that had a bit of that, but also a bit of my influence from the other side of the world. And people like Tim add another flavor, and people like Scott add a bit of influence from back in the 90s. And so it's a mix of all the kinds of music that we personally listen to.
Well, the Chinook Fest that you mentioned just a little early, you guys were doing a lineup for that, a lineup release party on Friday night. The Chinook Fest has really, it's really growing into a huge music festival, and it's not a very old festival, but it's really getting a lot of major artists. I think you have Austin Jenks going to be there this year, along with some other fantastic acts as well.
Yeah, Pickwick's going to come and headline this year, which is huge for the organizers, and it's Cody Beebe and Michelle Bounds that organized the whole thing with the Crooks, various members of Cody's band and family and everything. And it's really grown from this community party of a few hundred people to this, and it sold out last year in its second year, and that's huge for a music festival these days because there's so many festivals going on. The only one of its kind in that area. It's out in the Yakima area, closer to Natchez, but yeah, it's just a beautiful spot and great community aspect and great people, great music. This year should be another sellout. I'm anticipating that it will sell out again.
I completely think you're right about that. And people come from all over the country in Canada to come to that festival. Like you said, it's only a couple years old, and it's really, really growing. So, I mean, I guess really one of the first music festivals that started was Coachella, that really, mm-hmm. you know, kept it going. And now you're seeing, we don't have to, you know, even though it's great to go to Coachella, I mean, there's more opportunities for people to hear great music if you can't get out to the middle of the desert of California. We have something up here,
and,
too.
And the good thing, you're right about that, and the good thing about some of these smaller festivals is that they tend to have more local Pacific Northwest original music. And I love going to big music festivals just like most people, but sometimes it can get a bit lost in, you know, having so many bands from all around the world, and you kind of get inundated. So it's also nice to go to a small festival where the crowd and the musicians are all mingling like it's no big deal, and, you know, we're all hanging out listening to all the other bands, and sometimes you play at a music festival, you go and do your spot on the stage, and then you leave. But this is not that kind of festival. Most of the bands come out and they stay the whole 3 days just because they want to be there as well.
Yeah, it has a very good reputation amongst the musician community, and everyone wants to be a part of it. And I remember when the first one started, it was really big on social media. Everybody was tweeting out their pictures and putting them up on Facebook. And, I mean, it was just like something nobody had ever seen before.
That's right. That's right, yeah. They really deserve all the recognition that they're getting.
Definitely. When did you first pick up your first musical instrument? How old were you?
Well, my mum's a piano teacher back in Australia, so I played piano ever since I could move my fingers properly, I suppose. Always kind of banging on the piano. And I'm one of nine children, so we all kind of played instruments growing up, so I had access to a lot of different instruments. So piano was the main one growing up, and then I picked up a saxophone for a while and a violin for a while, and then eventually I kind of got a bit older and started listening to more rock music and jazz and funk and stuff like that, and I wanted to play drums. I remember being in school, maybe about 11, 12 years old, and my friends were giving me a hard time about being a violinist, and so I wanted to kind of be in the cool crowd, so I went and started learning how to play drums, and then that opened the door to being in a range of bands, growing up, garage bands, and that eventually moved on to guitar.
Well, with nine children in your family, you guys could have really had your own group almost.
Yeah, absolutely. We, and everyone kind of played something a little bit different, so it was really cool around Christmas, and when we could all kind of join in with the Christmas carols and having a big family and having experiences like that to look back on, that's really nice to have had that.
Is most of your family still in Australia?
Yeah, I have a brother that lives over here in the U.S. He lives in Florida, and he's been here for maybe about 10 years or 12 years or something like that, and he's got a couple of kids here and everything. So, yeah, I guess I kind of followed in his footsteps in a way, and I didn't expect that this would happen. I was just very fortunate that I would make it over here. But, yeah, the rest of my family all live in Australia.
Well, Florida is about as far from Seattle in the States as you could possibly get.
I know.
I mean, it's really one corner to the other.
Yeah, and it's one of those, he's lucky because the transition from the Australian climate to Florida, it's not so much of a change, but, you know, I grew up on the beach, and our summer lasts a lot longer than it does here. And we don't have any snow where I come from. I've never been skiing or snowboarding or anything in my life. So the change for me, climate-wise, coming to the Pacific Northwest, I'm still getting used to it after 2 years.
I can definitely relate to that because I was born and raised in San Diego, and I'm not a snow person at all either. And some people who really like the snow, I prefer snow in pictures, but and I can appreciate the beauty from the snow, you know, the snow out a window. But I'm one of those people, you don't want driving in it, and I don't ski. It's way too much effort to go skiing. It's just, I've never worked so hard in my life as trying to go skiing one time. So I prefer summer activities.
Yeah, I worry about the driving. You know, I'm always on tour and driving all over the place, and through the winter season, it's really been months just kind of white-knuckling it between all around Washington and Oregon and elsewhere. But it doesn't always feel the safest. It's really nice to tour at home and you kind of stop at the beach and have a swim before you get to the venue, and then you turn up with no shoes on and sand on your feet, you just kind of start playing, and it's really casual. And here I'm kind of struggling just to drive to the venue without sliding across the highway.
It's probably the most difficult part of the whole gig is getting there when the weather's bad.
That's true. That's, you know, me and a few other people always say, we don't get paid to play music. We get tour and drive all that distance and then set up all the gear and pack up all the gear and all the rehearsal and background stuff that we do. The gig's free, but the rest of it is that's where all the work comes in.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, you are a very accomplished player in the Australian didgeridoo. And do you want to kind of tell us how you got started doing that? And I'm sure that more people than I are very interested in this when you do play it, because I think Americans, and it may be like that around the world, but just have a fascination with watching didgeridoo played.
Yeah, well, I picked it up when I was about 13 years old and back home, and there was an Aboriginal guy that was busking. He was playing on the street and just by himself playing didgeridoo. And I was pretty young, so I didn't have much money, but whatever was in my pocket, it was like 10 or 20 bucks or something, and I just put that in his hat and said, that's yours if you can teach me how to do whatever that is that you're doing. And then, so I was really lucky that he allowed me to sit there with him, and he taught me how to do, you got to do this thing called circular breathing, which is you breathe out through your mouth and in through your nose at the same time. And that's how you produce this drone that most people, even if they don't know the word didgeridoo, they know the sound of it. Maybe they've heard it in a movie or a commercial or something. part of what I'm trying to do is to bring more knowledge to people that might not have the chance to see or hear a didgeridoo live. I want to bring that knowledge to people so they know what it is and where it comes from. And that opens up conversations to talk about the Aboriginal people in my home country. And that's really important to me.
Well, you need to get on the Ellen DeGeneres show, because Ellen's been looking for somebody to come on and play the didgeridoo. And
yeah,
you need to be that guy, Blake.
There's been a bunch of people that have put me forward for that. And, yeah, so if you have listeners out there that agree with you, then they should inundate Ellen's email and Facebook page and whatever else and let her know. Because it's not just about, like, you know, I'm a musician, so I'm looking to be out there playing shows and getting bigger and better shows as I progress through my career, but it really is a huge part of what I do to be able to share that knowledge. And I actually, right before I moved over to the U.S., I received permission from the Aborigines in Byron Bay. They call the Bundjalung Nation. And I have a song called Bundjalung that's written for them. So they gave me permission to both perform didgeridoo and to teach what I've learned so far from them, and also just with self-study and everything. So, yeah, that's huge. And some of the things I do over here, like workshops at high schools, and that's been really interesting to perform for some of these young kids that have no idea that we have Aboriginal people in Australia, let alone something cool like a didgeridoo.
Well, you're really the right person to convey that message, because especially for young teens, you know, you're not very old, and you're kind of like this cool rock star, and I think you're very relatable, and they would really embrace that music more from someone like you than they probably would, you know, someone like me, who's probably just a couple years older than you. But you're right in that sweet spot for them of people that they kind of look up to and hear, because anyone who has a kid of a certain age, it seems like they lose their parental hearing ability, I don't know, between 11 and 12, you know, on some kids it's a little later, 12, and then it doesn't come back until they have children. But but some people, their hearing is receptive, and it comes in a frequency of someone like you. So you are the perfect person to be able to go in the schools and you know, educate them on such a thing, which is wonderful and probably does more for their learning lesson that day than they probably retained all week.
I hope so, yeah. And I was, back in the day, I was like a teacher's assistant as well. So not only from a large family where I was constantly babysitting my whole life, but then I have a teaching background. So it's a really nice thing to do on tour, to give people more access and more knowledge for what I do, and also just to kind of keep you grounded and keep you real and make you remember why you're doing what you do. And when you're playing a lot of shows, and especially when you're playing a lot of big festivals and stuff, it's easy to kind of get carried away. So it's nice to just be around the community and be around young people especially, and just they keep you in check, which is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. What are you doing, Blake, when you're not playing music?
Practicing music or listening to music. So I've been a full-time muso for the last 5 years, and I'm really lucky that I'm able to do that full-time. I haven't had to focus on music just on the weekends like a lot of musos do. So, yeah, I'm constantly developing this kind of percussive guitar style that I have, and constantly looking for new ideas and listening to what other people have to offer, because I really want to keep what I do unique but accessible as well. So I don't want to get too carried away with it. Sometimes with didgeridoo based music, it can get kind of carried away in just one direction, and I want to make it more accessible than that. So I try and keep up with who's touring now in this area, and try and watch local bands and get on YouTube pretty regularly and stuff around there.
Yeah, so I spend a lot of my time on the road. I travel a lot, which is great. I get paid to see the country, and that's just an added bonus.
Mm-hmm. When you write something and you're coming up with all these sounds, when do you know that it's the right time to then share it publicly?
Normally when it gets stuck in my head. I've got like a lot of musicians, I've got a constant stream of music in my mind. That's not only songs that are on the radio or something, but also my own songs that I constantly play over in my head to see if it fits. It's just an automatic thing that happens. And it's kind of strange, but I play it over and over and over again in my head when I have a new riff or a new idea for a song, a new chorus. And then I'm lucky in that I can hear it and kind of picture it in my mind, and I already know before I pick up the guitar to complete a song, I already know if it's going to work or not, or if it's just a riff that I'll use later on. So, I don't know, it's kind of difficult to explain, but if I write something one day and wake up the next day and that's my only thing that's playing over in my head, then I normally keep progressing with that.
That makes sense if you're wired that way. I'm not wired that way, but I can certainly appreciate those people who are. when you're on stage,
as well.
I would imagine. But I think of like shopping like that. So I get it. It's just not music that's running through my head. It's sales. What are you thinking about when you're on stage and you're in that music? Are you really just thinking about the music when you're on stage?
Yeah, I am, but there's other things coming to my mind because I'm an independent musician, so I don't have, you know, managers and agents and people like that worrying about the business end of what I'm doing. I've got a couple of people that help me out here and there, but mostly it's all me. So I think about the venue and I think about the amount of people who are there and if they're having a good time. And, you know, it has to be a mutual agreement between everyone, between the performer, the venue, and the crowd. And if everyone is happy, then I'm happy. So I want to put on a good show, but I also want the venue to do good business so that they can stay in business and I can come back and play again and keep doing what I do. I try not to let that worry me too much, and often you see me closing my eyes on stage, and that's me saying to myself, okay, just be in the moment and realize where you are and what you're doing. Trying to express, because I'm an instrumentalist, so my instruments have to speak for me. So I try and express what the song's about and what I'm feeling at that moment through just the instruments, and that's a bit different than singing about how you feel. I always say that I want people to make up their own mind about what my songs mean.
Well, they're very deep, and there's a lot of layers to your music, and we're going to be playing some of that here. I'm going to play in just a minute Perpetual Leader off of the Underdog album. I wanted, before I let you go, if you could tell us a little bit about this Underdog album. And, again, people can go to BlakeNobleMusic.com. We have links that are going to link to all of this, and we'll be putting it out there a lot because I personally love this album. I was telling Blake when we were off air that some music has a time and a place. It fits really perfect, you know, at this event or at this gathering, or if you're in the car or you're at home or you're with friends or whatever. But this album, the music adapts no matter what situation you're in. If you're having a dinner party, you're having a party, you're in the car, you're alone, whatever, this music it just fits. It just fits for your soul, no matter what time of the day, night, whatever's going on in your life. It's a remarkable album, and really, it really needs to be heard by everybody. So I wanted you to talk a little bit about this album.
Thank you. It's they're very kind words. You know, it's those songs from the album. They're all, you know, it's really raw and honest
and real. And I wanted to collaborate on this album. It's my second album recorded here in Seattle with Cody Beebe and Eric Miller, who are now in this side project, Rust on the Rails, to combine a few different influences, like I was saying earlier. And the reason that it's called Underdog is because that's kind of how I feel in the music industry. I shouldn't really be able to just kind of move across the world and just start a career in the U.S. where it all happens in terms of the music industry, but it just kind of happens. So I've always felt like the underdog that's trying to make his way, but kind of doing it alone. Yeah, and obviously each individual song has its individual meaning, but you mentioned Perpetual Leader, and that's one of the main songs from the album. We did a video for that around the Yakima Valley. We did the filming, and so you can go on YouTube on my channel, Blake Noble Music, and you can look up the video for Perpetual Leader. And I think it's close to 10,000 views on there so far, which is pretty good for someone at my level. I also just had news a couple of weeks ago that song was a semi-finalist in the international songwriting competition in the instrumental section. So that's huge for me to... I don't normally go for competitions and awards and stuff, but that's actually something that is quite meaningful. Yeah, so the album's pretty special to me. I've been touring all over the Pacific Northwest and just over to Colorado and back recently. And in May, I'll be taking it over to Europe, mainly in France, and touring it over there and seeing how they take the album over there.
It just strikes me that you would think of yourself as an underdog, because I see you just as really, in my eyes, you're just like this mega star, you know, and it was just an honor for me to have you on. And so you're just so down to earth and just so normal, but you're so gifted, and it's really a dichotomy, because it's like you really should be sitting atop a mountain, I feel, and just playing your music, and then we should just be all listening, because it's just that good. And I am so just thrilled that we can, you know, talk to you today and get to know you more and introduce more people to your music, because you really are an artist. And a lot of times that word just gets thrown around, you know, just here and there, but Blake, you really are just an artist, and it's thrilling to have you right here in Seattle, for one thing, and have access to be able to hear this music. And if you can't get to Seattle and you can't hear Blake play, you can certainly buy his music and support this art. BlakeNobleMusic.com is where you can find out more information. Thanks, Blake, for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Oh, the pleasure's all mine. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, we're going to listen to Perpetual Leader, and then I'll be right back. Thank you.
Hi, friends. We have a brand new sponsor, Audible.com. You can go to audible.com/Northwest Prime and sign up for a free download and choose from thousands and thousands of best-selling and new release books. You can also exchange a book anytime, no questions asked. We all lead busy lives, but we can download this free audible.com app to our Android, our iPhone, iPad, Windows, Kindle Fire, you name it. It's easy to take with you on the go, whether you're working out, in the car, cooking at home, on the way to visit a friend, however you want, you can stay up to date with the greatest books in the world through this wonderful library. I recently chose Crusher by Niall Leonard. This mystery crime drama was filled with action. It was like I was watching a movie. The narrator spoke in an English accent, and I just felt like I was right there in London town. If you choose to stay with Audible, it's only $14.95 a month, and you can cancel at any time. At least check it out. It's free. See if it's for you. Tell them Northwest Prime sent you. That's audible.com/Northwest Prime, and get to reading when it works for you. Didn't you just love Blake Noble? I love Blake Noble. I'm just a huge fan, and we really need to get behind and support him. So please go to BlakeNobleMusic.com. Please tweet to Ellen. I mean, Blake really needs to be on her show. I mean, this is right up her alley. He is, like I said, he is an artist, and this is a type of music we need to get behind and support. There's a lot of great music out there. This is one of them that's right at the top. So Underdog is the name of his new CD. And you can again find that on all kinds of, you know, streams, iTunes, and different things. But you can go to BlakeNobleMusic.com and find out more information. And we're going to play as we go out here Tsunami off of the Underdog album. So thank you to Blake for coming on, and thank you for all of you for listening today. Thank you. Well, that's our show. We would like to thank our listeners, our guests, and of course our sponsor, Audible.com. We've included an easy one-click link to Audible.com where you can just go and browse and check out and see if catching up on your reading is right for you through an audiobook. The first book is free. Doesn't cost anything to check it out. So check it out. Get back with us. Let us know what you think. And be sure to also check out NorthwestPrime.com for this interview and other great interviews that we've had with numerous celebrities and other entertainers in the past. Thanks and have a great day.
This is Matthew Meadows, better known to some of you as Rango the Dog. You're surfing the seas of mojo with Seattle Wave Radio. Catch the wave.